Welcome. Today is the last day of March, I believe, 31st, 2009. And let's see what's happening in the sky. March 22nd till April 6th, Mercury has been in Pisces. Mercury is the planet of what?
Communication.
What bodily system does it Mercury rule?
The nervous system.
Mercury is debilitated in Pisces. It's its sign of greatest weakness. A planet can be debilitated in only one sign out of 12. So Aries through Pisces, you have 12 signs. A planet is debilitated in one sign only. And exalted, opposite of debilitated, very powerful, in one sign. So, Mercury is debilitated in Pisces. So, how does that fare for communication? Makes it difficult. We could expect communication breakdown, misunderstandings, disagreements, being on a different page, having trouble getting your point across. It can also, because Mercury is the planet of travel, and anybody who's in a travel business where they drive from one place to another, like a transport business or driver training business or taxi.
So the taxis are disputing
at the moment,
don't they? There you are.
And the taxis are striking or threatening a strike.
Yeah. Revolution.
So there you go. You got a debilitated Mercury. I think, is there a Lingus threatening a strike this week?
Yes, they were.
It's like every second week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Third week.
So
I don't think they actually do it. They just sort of rattle the sign and the...
Oh,
yeah, everybody goes.
I'm a bus driver.
Bus drivers? There you go. So there. That's all Mercury in Pisces sort of stuff. A lot of people are worried, but we know why they're worried. And that's because the economy is not doing well. And I hear Ireland, I read today, Ireland lost its AAA rating. So, they're concerned. So we only have till April 6th, and then Mercury will go into Aries. It'll be a little bit stronger. So that's one thing that's happening. Let's see what else we might find here. Well, Sun is there too. Now, we talked about that, I think, last week. All right, we went on this trip to India, as you all know, or many of you do. Colette and Catherine were also there with us. As you see, Catherine hasn't been the same. So she's looking better than ever. And anybody have anything to report in terms of, you don't have to have been to India, I'm just saying, do you have anything to report in terms of your connection to God, Spirit, your communion with the gods, any serendipitous events in your life? Most people call them coincidences. No. Yeah, Clindy and I have been getting up for the Brahma Muhurta every morning, bright and early, before the sun comes up.
4 o'clock?
5. An hour before the sun comes up is when the violet rays begin, that we get from the sun. Not the visible ray. And those are the most beneficial and spiritually powerful rays. And that's called the Brahma Muhurta. Hi, Sheila. Muhurta means time period. And Brahma means spirit. So it's the most spiritually auspicious time period. Approximately an hour before sunrise. And you can go outside. You don't have to go outside.
It suggests that you do, though, for health purposes.
For health purposes, yeah. We don't. I don't go outside. I sit right where your feet are. There. That's normally where I sit.
Do you find it difficult to get up in the morning?
Well, yeah, it's some days, sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
But it's an austerity. You're accepting it as an austerity. That's the whole idea.
It's quite enlightening, though. It really is.
I can imagine it is.
And then we do all of our mantras and our prayers and our meditation together.
Okay.
Which takes, half an hour, three quarters of an hour. And then we do our own apart from that. You know, so it's real nice because it's so quiet. And nobody, I mean, it's quiet here anyway.
Yeah, sure.
But nobody has stirred yet, you know, except we get up at 5, except for the birds, you know, they're getting up. So it's been, really nice.
Is that every morning this week you've been doing that?
We've been doing it now for 2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks. Okay, can I ask any questions? Do you go back to bed then?
No. We don't go back to bed. There's no point going.
You've been up since 5, so you don't take a sort of a nap or anything?
No, we
Tuesday night, I was
no, we don't really. No, we don't.
I just think it's hard to meditate on a Tuesday night if you've been up since 5.
Yeah,
stay awake.
Yeah.
Well, we were in India for 3 weeks. We had Ayurvedic treatments.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in the sunshine for 6 weeks.
I can definitely feel the difference, and I would recommend it to everyone to do it. Yeah. Just look at the newspaper and see what time the sun rises at, and make sure you're up an hour before that.
The sun
you can actually tell cause
rises.
The sky looks a certain color, bluey purple. Yeah.
The sun rises a minute earlier each day. So if the sun rises at 7:30 today, it will be at 7:29 tomorrow, for example. That's how it works.
Soon you'll be getting up there.
Well, soon we're going to have to... It actually worked out better. We were getting up at 5 and then daylight savings time kicked in. Mm-hmm. And so technically we're getting up at 4.
Yes.
True, exactly.
But we're actually getting up at 5. So we didn't change the alarm. We left it. So, it's better now, actually.
And the way it works is that the ultraviolet light that you get during the Brahma Muhurta is what all plants and animals need to be healthy, more so than anything else. And the higher the sun goes in the sky, past 8 o'clock in the morning, the sun becomes dangerous.
Yeah, it becomes more and more damaging as the day goes on.
And becomes
less favorable, more unfavorable.
And then come noon, the sun is actually taking more energy from you than it's actually giving. And that's the case for everything outside plants and humans.
Yeah. So ultraviolet toward infrared.
It goes into infrared.
Spectrum. That's Vastu. Or that's part of the Vastu understanding. That's why the sun's rays in the first 12 minutes of rising must hit your home, must strike your home in the first 12 minutes, or you'll miss out on the best possible rays. And it can also reduce your income subsequently.
That I found, I've been looking for ages because I know it's existed. It's between using Google Earth and another program, I can figure out the how high above sea level your house is, and then whether you're getting
all the slopes coming down,
taking it all into account, whether you get the sunrise from your house at a particular time of the year within 12 minutes.
And does it matter if it just hits the roof?
Yeah, as long as it hits the heart.
Well, ideally, it should come in through a window in the east part of your house, in an ideal circumstance. But even the rays striking the roof itself or the house itself will be beneficial. The rays will go through the wall, but not as easily, as they do through the window or an open window. We talked to Marcus Shmika yesterday, and he's going to come on the 27th of April, and he's going to give a talk on Vastu, Vasati, sacred Vedic architecture, and wealth, and how to create wealth in your life, in your home, using Vastu and Vasati. Vasati is his particular method of Vastu. So that will be the 27th of April. On the 28th of April, on Tuesday night, he's going to give a lecture on the time waiver technology. The time waiver, he has discussed before, tunes into the informational field surrounding us. Mind, matter. So mind is the informational field, but it's not just mind, it's more like the etheric, it's the spiritual field. Spirit pervades everything. This depends which jargon you want to use.
Jung,
the Akasha is ether, space. It's also, we might call it the collective unconscious. So they've developed this little machine that uses photon energy through laser to tune into you and find out what's going on with you, or it can do a person or an object or an animal or anything, and find out what state it's in, what are its strengths, what are its weaknesses. And then he has many, many collections of databases loaded into this program that it'll run through all of these different databases. We're talking thousands of different pieces of information, and it will come up with an analysis of what your blockages are. Or it'll come up with and or analysis of what the solutions are to remove the blockages. This is in the morphogenetic field, is another way they talk about it. So he has invented this thing. It's based on the principle of radionics, but it's been taken to a much, much more developed level. Of course, allopathic medicine wouldn't ever sign on to anything like that. But
he does have a lot of Western.
There are many doctors that are using it, but not, they wouldn't be using it officially, you know. Anyways, he's going to speak on that. Because he's also, you know, wants to sell a few of those systems. Very expensive, yeah. It's not so much the components as the amount of effort that's gone into it. It's been 3-4 years in the making. And there are reports of people getting cured of cancer. So, I mean, it's happening. He told one interesting story. I mean, there's more anecdotes. I don't, what strikes me right at this moment is this one gentleman bought an old building on a property that he wanted to renovate for his business. It's a fairly large building, as much as I remember about the building. And they were having some problem. I don't remember specifically what the problem was. And Marcus went over with the time waiver. He calls this system the time waiver. And he did an analysis. And it said there was underground water in the southwest area of the property, either of the property and or of the building. And so they asked the people and whom they bought the building from. They didn't know anything about it. They looked at the plans. The plans didn't show anything about it. And they did some further research and investigation. And it had been an old mill. And there was an underground river in the southwest area of the building. And the worst place you would have water is in the southwest area, which, elementally speaking, is ruled by earth. So you want to have a buildup of earth and strength and density and volume. You don't want to have water. So they went in there. I think they filled it up with the rocks and pebbles and gravel and as much as they could. But no one knew of this except the time waiver discovered it. So I thought that was a pretty amazing story. Anyway, there's, it seems to be helping lots of people do a lot of things.
Yeah, machine and device, and then charge clients.
Yeah.
For readings and yeah. Pay the investment. Mm.
Yeah.
$12,000 doesn't sound like an awful lot, to be honest.
Well, I mean, if it does, what it
for cancer and 12,000, that'll throw it out. If you say 12 million in cancer, we'll all buy one thing.
Yeah.
You see, the other thing is though, the remedies that it would give out, it's not going. Well, it will pulse the medicines to the person. So just like it read your fields to start off with, it can send the messages back at you. But ideally, you want prescribe the mantra, you should do that mantra.
Yeah, but it might prescribe a particular Bach flower.
Yeah.
But it can pulse the energy to you. So you don't have to take the flower. So the machine is set into motion, so it optimizes you an hour a day for 3 weeks. It's programmed in. And you'll get that optimized, and that energy travels through the morphogenetic field. And you know, it doesn't matter where you are, if you're awake, asleep, or in Timbuktu, it gets you.
It finds you. So this is like an internet, and I don't mean to produce this, but this is like an internet in terms of access and speed and everything. Wherever you are, this goes through those channels.
Yeah, it's the etheric field. It's the space between molecules. It's the informational field that surrounds us all. So there's nothing, there's no such, technically, there's no such thing as distance in the informational field. Because information, distance takes place down here on the physical plane. This is not physical.
So this has your unique personal code.
Yeah, well, all you have to do is put in your name and your address. A photo also helps. Just so it knows who you're talking about. And your energy is in your name and address. There's no one else named Antonio living at that address. Experience with this with clients is once you discover the entity and sort of point at it, there, I see you, there you are, then the entity knows it's been found out. It freaks. It gets really angry. Because from that point forward, it's only a question of time before it's gone. And it knows that because it's been hiding out, hiding in plain sight for who knows how long. And once it's recognized, it's pretty much on its way out.
So you can discover it yourself. You can spot that entity and say, gotcha.
Yeah, you can, but it's not so easy. It's like analyzing yourself. Mm. One of the harder things to do in life.
Yeah, it's always hard to see things associated with yourself.
Yeah, you don't have objectivity. Mm. Nobody does. We're all seeing ourselves from our own point of view.
And when you make love to somebody who's an entity, then that entity gets into you?
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. You see, there's many different kinds of these things, and they can attach for many reasons. Sometimes they're just like, they'd be like little, like a fly, you know. You know, so they're that mild, and some of them could be real, you know, third degree Klingon, so to speak. But when there is, we just had a girl, I just did this girl's chart. Very spiritual girl, and but been having problems for the last 2-3 years, and can't figure it out. And I was doing the chart over the phone, and then I realized somehow it comes to me sometimes, and I said, "Oh yeah, well, this, you got an entity." So I called Kalindi, and I said, "This, I have this person on the phone. Does she have an entity?" "Yeah." "Where is it?" "It's down here. It's attached here." Well, the girl had a appendix or some sort of surgery.
You see, you have to have a tear somewhere.
Normally, you'd have to have a tear, a hole in your aura, in your etheric field. And then it gets in, you see, and it can attach itself far more easily. So, you know, when people use a scalpel and slice and dice you in the name of medicine, that will tear your etheric field, your aura. Now, that can heal just like a physical wound. But, you know, and hospitals are full of those things. Give me a break. You know, if you want to heal and recuperate, the last place you want to go is a hospital. You got as much chance of going to a cemetery as you do a hospital of healing.
How can get rid of it?
Oh, there's many ways to get rid of it. We got,
I know the loaf. I don't care.
Called Ghostbusters.
You get obsessed with your own people that have them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've cleared lots of them. So I cleared this girl's. I told her what to do, and she did it, and within 2 weeks it was gone. Yeah, what are you hoping, they don't like water? Or I drown them.
I drowned myself while I was out.
Yeah. Is that him swimming behind you? Yeah, I didn't know he could swim. There's many things you can do to get rid of them. It's entirely possible. You know, you want to What you want to think about first is how did you get them?
Yeah.
What attracted?
That's very important.
Yeah.
Like
how did you attract
it?
The mind body spirit. Well, we call it the mind body spook festival. If that place is full of Klingons and entities, in the name of higher consciousness.
I love your introduction so much, Simon.
And look at your hair, all set. Just get there first day, first hour, first minute. Just don't go in on the last day when everyone's.
So you're saying you can't go in there without coming out with one?
No, you can. But as the day wears on, it gets dense in there. You not noticed it?
Yeah, I've noticed that. It gets heavy.
You know, people have nothing to do with spirituality, but are, you know, let's just say average people, materialistic people, are probably safer to be around than pseudo-spiritual people.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because they start channeling.
Oh.
Well, what are we channeling here?
Right.
Oh, whatever entity comes in. I've done this impression for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in comes the entity, and therefore, we have all been brought together here for our greater good. And they go on into this thing, and just who is that person? Well, it must be good. Why must it be good? You know, who are you inviting in? Tom, Dick, or Harry? So there's no discretion, there's no discrimination, there's no boundaries, there's no control. Oh, please come in. What is it, the 5th Russian Army that's jumped in here? And I mean, I've seen, you know, don't forget I was in Los Angeles for the whole beginning of the new age. So I saw a lot of that stuff.
Would there be a lot more of that happening now with the energy frequency building up more and more, the planet changing?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that's always been there. You know, you take a country like this, this is an old country. So you got lots of spooks around the place. You know. Plenty to go around.
Somebody come home with me on the
drive. They won't. I mean, there's really nothing to worry about for the most part. So,
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, say you just wash with your pen. What do you then to, like, protect your aura and to...
Well, if ghosts, spirits, entities, Klingons love the mode of ignorance.
Right.
Thomas. So the more you are vibrating in a lower mode, the better they like it. You know, it doesn't mean to say they couldn't latch onto you if you're vibrating in a higher mode. They can. But, you know, people who are alcoholic, well, let's get an extreme example. You're walking down the street and there's a bum, an alcoholic person who lives on the street. And he's standing there, and he's conversing with who? Nobody, right? Is what you think. He's conversing with 5 people. They're all attached to him. He's not conversing with nobody. He's conversing with the people who are attached to him that you can't see.
He can see them again.
Well, if he's drunk enough, sure, why not? See, the more you get out there, the more you can see on that level.
Oh,
right?
It's like a trip on
the road. It's like you, if you go out to that dimension through alcohol, drugs, repeated, you know, I mean, these people are not in their heads. Are they? Why would they be acting like that? They're sleeping outside, they're eating McDonald's out of the bin. Come on. So the more you get out there, the more you can actually see these different things. So that's an extreme example of motive ignorance. So you don't really, you know, you want to stay away from heavy drinking and heavy drug taking and, you know, bars and places like that are full of entities. You know, any dark place. Cemeteries. Yeah, well, some places you can really feel it. You know, they got this sort of trapped energy, stagnant energy feel sometimes.
What do you say about cemeteries?
Well, cemeteries are full of them, aren't they?
So you just don't go visit your grave?
Oh, no, you can go visit the grave if you want to.
Yeah.
You can visit a grave, I mean, why, you know, no offense to your belief. Why do you need to visit a grave to have a fond memory of somebody?
Mm. I have a friend whose daughter loves to visit cemeteries and loves to take photographs. What the hell is that? I had to bring her around the world from the States. It was like, I had to go around the cemetery. So I was like, what the hell? I mean, I have no interest in it.
Was she goth?
Yeah, she was a goth.
There you go. That whole goth thing is a mode of ignorance.
Right.
It's very destructive. It's very dark.
It's
depressive.
I noticed how she would communicate on Facebook. I was like, oh my God, I wouldn't be using that word. It just wouldn't be me, the way to express myself. It's not a judgment. I was just quite shocked about the way she would express herself. And okay. I was just doing my job, and I had to do it.
You know, it's like anything else. You won't catch germs if you keep yourself clean. You know? You won't pick stuff up if you bathe regularly and you keep yourself clean and fit and healthy, and you know what I mean? It's the same idea. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing to worry about. You shouldn't walk out of here afraid of...
You're happy going to a cemetery or happy going.
Well, then that's fine. You can go to a cemetery. I mean, I have no problem...
Going up and down to them, just sitting and having a chat.
I have no problem going to cemeteries when we're, like, visiting...
No, yeah, but this girl just likes to go to cemeteries.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is, if we're visiting an old church or something, we walk through the cemetery. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I understand if someone's not working.
Yeah, you can go visit your... My parents are in a cemetery. The last time I saw them is when we put them in the ground. I mean, what's the point? If I want to connect with them, I can think of them.
Of course. No, but that's...
So.
Cheer up now. Yeah, please sing yourself.
I don't know if that's really going to do it for you. My singing. All right, so on Friday we have a very auspicious day in the Vedic calendar, and that is the appearance of Ram. Sri Ram. And, we've talked about Ram on several occasions. Vishnu, according to Vedic understanding, yoga philosophy, is God. Name for God. Vishnu means he who lives everywhere, which would define God. And all of the incarnations or manifestations of God come from Vishnu as the source. Vishnu would be the original candle. And from that original candle, you take a second candle and you'd light it. Now you have two candles, but only one of them is the original. So that is the concept of avatars of Vishnu. Vishnu is... widely known to, as you should know by now, to have 10 incarnations. There's one or two of them are disputed, depending whether you're in North or South India. If you remember our friend Gaur Keshava in Sri Rangam giving us the tour and telling us about the Dash Avatar. Buddha they didn't agree with. Anyway, one of the avatars of Vishnu is Ram. And Ram was an enlightened king. And he married Sita. And I've told you this so many times that I'm sort of afraid to repeat myself. When you travel to Asia, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Bali, Japan, China, Tibet, I'm not sure about Tibet, India, naturally, Afghanistan, perhaps, many, many countries, the ancient Vedic legend that is most often depicted in the art, the music, the dance, is the story of Ram in all of those countries. Now, because it traveled from country to country, from culture to culture, from language to language, from dialect to dialect, it's all a little bit different, but largely the same. And when you see it, and you, when you know it, and you see it, and you recognize it. Oh, yeah, there it is. You know, that's Ram. Ram Lila. Lila means the pastime. So, here's the story of Ram. There was a king, Dasharat, of Ayodhya. Ayodhya is a place in India. It would be a little bit northeast of Delhi. And Delhi is kind of in the middle of the country, a little bit north. Delhi is the capital. Ayodhya exists even today. Ayodhya means unconquerable. So Dasharat had, and this, we are in the Kali Yuga now, Iron Age, right? In terms of universal time. This was the Treta Yuga. So we're in the Iron Age. We got the Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, and Iron Age. The Golden Age is 1,728,000 years. The Silver Age is 1,296,000 years. The Bronze Age is 864,000 years. And the Iron Age is 432,000 years. And these four seasons repeat. Okay, and then you have a minor, small end of small dissolution at the end of each one, and the next one comes like the seasons. So we're in the Iron Age. Ram was in the Silver Age. Okay, so people in the Golden Age, people live for 100,000 years. In the Silver Age, they live for 10,000. In the Bronze Age, they live for? And in the current age, they live for? 100. Do they live for 100? Not even. Supposed to. So that's where we are in time. So Dasharat had, he was a very powerful king, very wealthy. He was an enlightened monarch, an enlightened king. The best form of government there is enlightened monarchy. But that's a whole other presentation. We won't go into that right now. It's way better than anything else if the guy or woman is truly enlightened. So when you have an enlightened king, everything works like clockwork in the kingdom. Everybody does their duty according to their nature. Everybody's happy doing their job. Everybody's needs are met. There's enough rain. There's no drought. There's no famine. There's no want. There's no financial or economic collapse when the king is enlightened. When the king is offering sacrifice and homage to God and recognizing God. When the people are recognizing God as the center of their lives, this is all possible. Everything functions in harmony. That is an enlightened monarchy, an enlightened kingdom. So this is what they had at that time. Then the problem was Dasharatha had three wives, Kaushalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. Kaushalya was the principal wife, the first wife, the oldest wife. But he was getting quite a bit older, but hey, if he lives for 10,000 years, I don't know exactly how old he was. And, you know, even in biblical stories you hear of Moses or Abraham impregnating the wife when they were hundreds of years old, for example. And these things are possible in a different time scheme. So Dasharatha was getting older and was unhappy that he had no heir to carry on the dynasty. He had no boys, no girls, he had no one. So a sage came one day to visit the kingdom. And Dasharatha told the sage of his misfortune, that he really wanted to have an heir. And the sage said, well, we can organize that for you. There's a special ceremony, a sacrifice that you can do, sacred ceremony, sacred fire ceremony. And using mantras, because mantras can accomplish anything and everything. If A, you know the right mantra, and B, you chant the mantra purely enough times. Pardon?
A bell. You can hear a bell in here? Like the angels in my ear.
Well, you're welcome. There's no extra charge for that. So, is that ringing any bells for you?
I've got your enemy tonight.
So, the king said, please, let's do this. So this sage conducted this sacred fire ceremony with mantras. You know, probably hundreds or thousands of people would have been in attendance. Many great sages and different kings and, you know, everybody in their finery, and no expense was spared, that sort of thing. And this is the days of the elephants and the chariots and the horses and all this great stuff, which India you can still see today, some of that. So out of from the fire came the fire god himself, carrying a urn, and he presented it to the sage. And then he disappeared back into the flames. And the sage said, here is what we wanted. It's sacred piyasam. Remember the piyasam we had in India? Piyasam is kind of a sweet rice or a rice pudding. That is the substance that they normally would prepare for sacrifices. Sacred events. So he handed it to Dasharatha the king, and he said, divide this among your wives and pregnancy will come. So Dasharath gave half of the substance to his principal wife, Kaushalya. The other half he gave to Kaikeyi, his second wife. And Sumitra, the third wife, was feeling kind of left out, naturally. So I think Kaikeyi, or I'm not sure it was Kaikeyi or Dasharath, Kaikeyi took a quarter, and then Sumitra was given 2/8, which is the remainder. Two portions, an eighth. And they all became pregnant. And they were all pregnant around about the same time. So the boys were born consecutively. To Kaushalya was born Ram. She's the principal queen. He's the oldest boy. Ram is Vishnu himself. They say in terms of the energetic portion of Vishnu, they say he's about, 50% Vishnu or 3/4 Vishnu. I think it's about 50% Vishnu. His chart, his birth chart, phenomenal. Phenomenal birth chart. He's got like 6 exalted planets at the time of his birth. We have his birth chart. And we have a horse that's got 6 exalted planets that we named Ram. Not surprising. So he was the first one born. Then to Kaikeyi was born Bharata. He's the second one born. And to Sumitra, who took the 2/8 portions, were born the twins, Lakshman and Shatrughna. So they were twin boys, 4 boys. So they grew up, they had all good qualities and virtue, especially Ram. And very just and righteous and virtuous and helpful and kind, brave. They were sent to learn Kshatriya Dharma, which means the ways of warriors and princes, how to rule a kingdom. They studied the Vedas, they learned mysticism, they learned mantras, they learned weaponry. They learned everything. And even as very young boy, maybe around 16, the sage Vishvamitra showed up at the kingdom and said, I want Ram, I want to take him with me. We have in the forest, we're trying to undertake a lot of important sacred fire ceremonies and various other sacred rituals, but there are rakshasas, ogres and demons and dark forces that are destroying these events. So I want to take Ram and his brother Lakshman, because Lakshman is like Krishna and Balaram, his brother. So it's Ram and Lakshman, the same two beings. So they're kind of inseparable. And they travel different incarnations. Dasharath, the king, no, you can't take Ram. My Ram, he's getting a little bit too touchy-feely, you know. Clingy, needy, codependent. And Vasishta, the family priest, a very powerful sage, said, Dasharath, you better let this guy take him. Otherwise, there's going to be real trouble. He's going to do you a favor. Just let him take your boys. Well, I don't want them to be in harm's way. I'll give him my whole army. He doesn't want your army. He's going to take your sons and train them properly. Now, let them go. So, very reluctantly, he let Ram and Lakshman, the two of them, go with Vishvamitra. Took them to the forest. And they were tested very early on. Some rakshasas, ogres, demons came to disrupt something. And Ram and Lakshman used their bows and slew the demons. So Vishvamitra was very pleased with their courage, bravery, sense of duty. And so he said, okay, now I'm really going to, I'll teach you all the mantras and the use of all these weapons. And the mantras would, you know, they would shoot fire weapons and rain weapons and clouds and fog and haze and you name it. And they could bring down, and they could bring down trees and rocks and just by shooting an arrow and consecrating it with a mantra. So they learned all this under the tutelage of Vishvamitra. Then Vishvamitra said, we're going to take a trip over to the kingdom of Videha, because King Janak is having a Swayamvara ceremony. He's giving away his daughter, Princess Sita, in marriage. And he is doing this through a test of strength. And he has a bow, huge bow, that belonged to Shiva. Shiva is of the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma the creator, Vishnu the maintainer, Shiva the destroyer, in the universal pantheon. This was Shiva's bow. So the test is string Shiva's bow. All you got to do is string it. You don't even have to do anything with it. Just bend it, string it. And all kings, princes, warriors, kshatriyas were invited far and wide. Whoever strings Shiva's bow can have the hand of my beautiful daughter, Sita, in marriage. And the fabulous dowry I will give. Thousands of horses, hundreds of thousands of cows, thousands of elephants, 1,000 handmaidens, vast chests of gold coins, jewels of every description, silk cloth embroidered with gold, and on and on and on. Spare no expense. Very, very wealthy. So Sita appeared in this fashion. King Janak was going to do a sacred sacrifice. To do this, he had to, according to Vastu, take the string and the stakes and demarcate a square piece of ground that was going to be the sacred ground upon which the ceremony would take place outside, outdoors. So he had done that part, and then the priests are there giving him all the guiding him in this. Then when you're building a house or when you're having a sacred ceremony, the ground must be clean. It can't be filled with twigs and rocks and pieces of bone and plastic bags from the spa. Especially that you can't have. So you have to clean it properly. So it had been cleaned, and Janak the king himself was plowing the field with the bullock, and he was holding the plow, and the bullock was pulling. And as the plow was overturning the furrows of the rich earth, there was a baby girl lying in the furrow. And she was the most beautiful baby he'd ever seen. And she was just lying there with this aura, this effulgence coming from her that was all attractive and not human. And she was Lakshmi herself, the goddess of fortune, in this form. Because Vishnu doesn't go anywhere without Lakshmi, his consort, the goddess of fortune. On the far end there, you see Lakshmi and Vishnu, side by side. There's no such thing as God without the goddess. Sorry. It don't exist. Anybody who tells you it does is missing part of the story. So that is Lakshmi on the far end, and next to her is Vishnu. This is Lakshmi on this end as well. That is Krishna and Radha in the middle. Again, Vishnu and Lakshmi. Same. So, because he found her on the sacred ground in a furrow, he named her Sita, which means, in Sanskrit, furrow. And he took her up and he said, "You will be my daughter. You have been given as a gift because I am undertaking to do this great sacrifice." I don't even remember what the reason was, but there she was. So now she was a marriageable age, which back in those days is young, 16, you know, 14, 15, 16. The belief is there that once a woman has her first menstrual period, by then, or at that time, if not before, she should have her betrothal. Why? So her mind doesn't flit from man to man to man. Never mind her body. Her mind. A woman needs to have her mind focused on the man she's going to be with. That brings peace of mind. And it also brings protection to her. So you may agree or disagree, but that is the Vedic system. So Vishvamitra, the sage, of course, knew all of this because he could see past, present, and future. He knew exactly who Sita was, and he knew exactly what he was doing. So they showed up at the Swayamvara ceremony, and they were announced, and King Janak was very pleased to see them. Many kings, the bow was brought in by I don't know how many men, like, you know, 50 men. It was huge, big, heavy bow. It was on like a machine, with wheels, to roll it on in, you know, with all these guys pulling the ropes and pushing. And so all these different kings had to try to string this bow. Good luck. They couldn't even lift it, never mind string it, most of them. They were very strong, mighty warriors. So then Ram, casually, it was Ram's turn. He walked up and picked up the bow, bent it, and he was just stringing it, and the bow snapped in two and broke. So, hush and a mild roar from the crowd, a gasp. Who is this? String the bow. I couldn't lift it. This guy lifts it, strings it, breaks it. Who is this guy? Sri Ram. So naturally, Sita is betrothed immediately to Ram. Plans are made. Coincidentally, she has three other sisters from Janak's other wives. And guess what? We've got four for marriage. Four boys, four girls. Put them all at once, please. Reducing the cost. He may have thought like that. I don't think he was cheap about it, though. So they're married. So a few years went by. I don't recall how many. Not many. Ram was most beloved by all. He was just, kind, honorable, thoughtful, selfless, very dutiful, virtuous. Everybody loved him. From the small guy in the street to kings and important people in the kingdom. His stepmothers, all of his brothers, everybody adored him. Because he was that kind of a guy. Very loving and lovable. So Dasharath said, I'm getting old now and I'm happy I have an heir. I have four fine boys, and the oldest boy would typically get the kingdom, kind of like in Ireland here. The oldest boy gets the farmland, even today. And so he called his council together in his court, ministers, etc., and he said, my intention is to crown Ram king and retire from political life. And I guess I wouldn't have called it political life back in that day. Anyway. So everybody approved this decision. To well done, well met, excellent. At that time, Bharat, Kaikeyi's son, second oldest, had gone away to another kingdom to spend some time with his grandfather, Kaikeyi's father, who wanted to visit with his grandson for a while. So he was off in another kingdom for, you know, who knows how long, a month, 2 months, 3 months, I don't know. So he wasn't there. And everybody's quite happy with that Ram was going to be made king, and King Dasharath called Ram to him and said, it's been decided, you're going to be king. Everybody's happy. We'll announce it in the kingdom. And the astrologers have said that tomorrow is an auspicious day. I'd rather do this sooner than later. So you're going to be crowned king tomorrow. And Ram says, as you wish, Father, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. If I can serve you, I'm happy. Serve the kingdom. So Mantara heard the news. Mantara was an old hunchback woman. Not the happiest person around. She is Queen Kaikeyi's maid servant. She would have been the nanny when Kaikeyi was a newborn. She was with her entire life. Kaikeyi's the second queen. whose son Bart is, as they say in India, out of station. Out of town. Out of station. So, Mantara, the maid servant, says, Kaikeyi, you fool. Right under your nose. Your whole life is about to be destroyed. And here you sit, like a fool trying to pick out a dress. And look what's happening. You don't even know what's going on, do you? What? They're going to make Ram king. Dasharatha's going to retire from political life and make Ram king. And there you sit, combing your hair. Foolish, foolish woman. Well, of course Ram's going to be king. He's the heir apparent. Everybody loves Ram. I love Ram. We all love Ram. We all know Ram's going to be king. What's the problem? Oh, yeah. Then what's going to happen to your son, Bart? When Ram's king, he's probably going to be sent away. He's going to be nothing but a maidservant. That's what's going to happen to him. You foolish woman, and there you sit idly doing nothing while your whole life is about to be destroyed. What are you talking about, woman? And she worked on her and worked on her and worked on her, Mantara, until she broke her down and made her believe that this is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to anyone at any time. And she must do something to stop it. And Kaikeyi said, well, what can be done? There's nothing that can be done anyway. And she said, oh, yes, there is. Don't you remember many, many years ago? Because Kaikeyi was a warrior princess. She was the son of kings, the daughter of kings, and had some training in that area. Very courageous, daring girl. She was actually Dasharatha's favorite queen. He loved her more than the others. And everybody knew it. So Dasharatha had been involved in a battle. And on the battlefield, he was cut down and knocked unconscious. And his charioteer was killed. And he lay there, and the battle waged around him. And Kaikeyi had seen this from the sidelines, from someplace, ran out onto the battlefield, jumped on the chariot, took the reins and drove the chariot off the battlefield, out of harm's way, tended to Dasharatha's wounds, saving his life. And at that time, when he regained consciousness, he said, what happened? She told him. He says, you saved my life. She said, you know, I don't know what he was thinking about. Most guys I know would have been embarrassed if their wives would have ran out onto the battlefield and saved them from... But that's a separate story. It's not part of the story. So, he said, I want to offer you a boon. A favor. No, I'm going to offer you two boons. Whatever you want, I'm going to give to you. For saving my life and for being so courageous. And Kaikeyi says, no, never mind that. It's not important to you. Doesn't matter. I'm off. Okay, later, sometime later. Fine. But when it's time and you want it, you let me know and I'll give to you. So Mantara reminds Kaikeyi, have you forgotten? He owes you for his life. His word is as good as gold. When Dasharatha says something, it happens. His whole reputation rests on his word. Don't you see? Now's the time. Well, what do you expect me to ask him? You tell him that you want Bart crowned the king. And the second boon, Ram sent into exile for 14 years. She says, what on earth are you talking about? Why would you send Ram, even if we had Bart crowned king, why would you send Ram into exile? Do you think Ram's just going to sit there while Bart's king and not enter into some intrigue to overthrow him? Mantra, what are you talking about? Trust me, Kaikeyi. Do what I tell you or your life will be destroyed. The name Mantra in Sanskrit means stir. She's a stirrer. She's stirring it up. She's the winder. So she says, yeah, you must get rid of him. So he's not around. He won't create any havoc or mayhem. So finally she convinces Kaikeyi, and Kaikeyi goes into the lamentation room. And her clothing's loose and her hair gets loose and the jewels are falling off of her, and she begins the crying in the lamentation room. Dasharat, the king, comes in to tell her the joyous news that he's chosen Ram to be crowned king tomorrow. And Kaikeyi is beside herself. He can hardly get a straight word out of her as to why she's so upset. What are you so upset about on this joyous occasion? So she tells him, you promised me these boons and you haven't given... Well, give me your boons. Don't worry about it. Don't be sad. Be happy. Whatever you want, I'll give to you. Like I said, I would. She said, okay, well... You know, you sent Bart away. I know you're up to something. He said, I didn't send Bart away. Your father wanted to see him. He's visiting your father. Why did you choose this time to crown Ram then? Because this was a convenient time and an auspicious time. Yeah, right. I know you wanted to edge Bart out and you don't want me to have any say in the kingdom, and you know, all the things that Mantra had put in her head. She says, okay, I'll take my boons then, but when you hear my boons, you go back on your word anyway, so there's no point in my even telling you. Of course I won't go back on my word. I never go back on my word.
She's stirring him up as well, so that he
all big time. Yeah.
Building him up to not be able to deny, deny her.
I'm not even going to bother telling you because I know you won't fulfill them. Of course I'll fulfill them.
What woman would I test that?
She must have been PMSing.
Now that case moved.
Yeah, Kai.
I am the only other
Mantra would have went, oh yeah, she's just about to start now.
She was perfectly normal 2 days ago.
She did 5 minutes ago. So she says, the first thing I want is, I want, there's Sita there, Shoka, Sita the lamenter. I want, cramp in my leg. I want my son Bart to be crowned king, not Ram. And Dasharath's face went ashen. And the second thing I want is Ram to be banished to the forest for 14 years of exile. Living rough, living under the stars. No princely life, but the difficult outdoor life. life in the forest. And he says, why? Woman, what? Why would you want this? What are you talking about? Who's put you up to this? Why would you want this? She says, well, I know what's going to become of me once Ram's the king. And then, of course, then they argue back and forth and back and forth. And she won't relent. She cries. She throws herself on the ground. And this and that. And she says, oh, yeah, well, then don't fulfill it. And the whole world will know you go back in your word. Your word is, means nothing. You don't fulfill what you promise. He had no choice. Because he was a man of his word. He was devastated. Absolutely devastated. He says, do you not know that you're killing me? These words are killing me. If this comes to pass, my life won't go on. Just so you know. He passes out. He's so overcome. He falls unconscious, then regains consciousness. This goes on all night. Waking up, falling unconscious, arguing back and forth all night long till sunrise. The two of them in the lamentation room. At sunrise, he calls for his chief minister. He tells him the change of plan. That Bharata will be crowned king. And he's to be sent for immediately. Of course, that'll take a long time. By the time the messenger gets there, he's brought back. It might take a few weeks. I don't know. Ram is sent for, and Ram is told. Ram, there's a change of plan. Kaikeyi has these boons. I've granted her the boons, and Bharata will be crowned king. Ram said, okay, father. It's fine with me. I'm all right with that. And you're to go into exile for 14 years. And not come back. Dasharatha again collapses with a broken heart, falls unconscious. Ram revives him. And he says, is this your wish, mother? He looks at Kaikeyi, calls her mother like he normally does. And she says, yes, it's my wish. He said, very well, your wish, my father's wish, I'll leave today. So all the news spreads like wildfire through the kingdom, which is devastating news. And Lakshman, the twin, he and Ram are like this, very close. Lakshman says, you're not going anywhere without me. I'll go with you too, to support you. I don't want to go. I don't want to be here if you're not here. And Ram says, no, you're not meant to go. I'm meant to go. Well, he says, doesn't matter. I'm going to follow you anyway. So I'm going. And then Sita hears this, and Sita is raised as a princess throughout her lifetime. So lives the good life, the high life. And she said, I'm your wife. Wherever you go, I go. I'll go to. He says, the forest, living under the stars in the outdoors, in the weather, is no place for you. She says, well, I married you, didn't I? Through thick and thin, I'll go. So the three of them set out with most of the citizens following behind. They're all brokenhearted. None of them can believe such a travesty is taking place. They're also attached to Ram. They don't want him to go, so they follow him like to the edge of the forest. And, you know, half the army and this and this and that and chariots and horses and people. And finally, you know, he says, go home, go home. you can't follow me. And the three of them go by themselves. They begin forest life. Lakshman is the one who hunts and provides them with meat, deer, collects roots, fruits, herbs, and they build a little hut in the Dundak forest, and they live simply. And you know, they have different adventures, and they meet different people and different sages. They kill off some more demons that are ruining the sages' ceremonies, and so it goes. In the meantime, Bharata has come back to the kingdom, and before that happens, Dasharatha's heart is absolutely shattered from Ram leaving and this the whole reversal that Dasharatha dies shortly thereafter, the king. He can't sustain life. And the place is like a desolate desert where it used to be so joyful and full of life. Bart returns and says, they didn't tell him what happened. They just told him he had to come back immediately. So he comes in, he looks, and he knows there's something terrible has happened. Could see the signs of it everywhere. Walks in and he asks, what has happened here? And he finds out what happened. What his mother created, and he is absolutely furious and also devastated. So he goes to find his mother, Kaikeyi. Bart, I'm so happy to see you. Hear what I've done for you. You're to be crowned king. You stupid woman. What are you doing? Who? How? What have you done? What were you thinking? Well, Mantra said that... Mantra. He gets the whole story. Mantra is banished. Get out of here. Never come back again. If I ever lay eyes on you again, your life's finished. Out of my sight. He was going to send Kaikeyi into exile, and he was convinced not to by Kaushalya and Sumitra, the other queens. So his first order of business is, the funeral ceremony for his father. If it hadn't been done, maybe it had been done. And he doesn't want the throne. He wants Ram on the throne. So his goal is to go into the forest, find Ram, and to have him come back and forget all this nonsense. Take the throne. And everything will be fine, other than the fact that Dad's dead. So he goes to the forest and he finds Ram, and they embrace. And he says, "I wasn't behind this. You have to believe me. This wasn't my idea." Ram says, "I know. It's not you. And I don't want to be king." He says, "You must be king now." No. I don't want to be king. You just come back, you be king. He says, "I can't come back. Because Father has asked me to go away." "Yeah, but Father's dead now." And no. "I'm carrying out my Father's will. When 14 years have passed, I will return. It's only been a few months." And Bharata says, "I will not sit on the throne, ever." So Bharata takes Ram's shoes, like his sandals. And he takes them back to Ayodhya and he places them on the throne. And his shoes are sat on the throne and they are a symbol of his being the king for the next 14 years. No one sits on the throne. Because Ram is in the renounced order of life, living in the forest, Bharat goes and lives in the forest outside of Ayodhya. And also takes up the garb of a hermit, like Ram. But runs state business all day long, in absentia, does all the signing of the papers, making the decisions, all the stuff's taken into the city, and carried out, but he doesn't have anything to do with it. So he's doing his duty, but he's not. He's living like Ram, which was his pledge to himself. So the place is really topsy-turvy. So the only one of the brothers that's there is Shatrughna, the other twin, who doesn't have a very high profile. You don't hear a lot about the guy. He's not that big a star in the firmament. So there's a big demon named Ravan, and he's defeated even the gods, Indra and the gods, king of heaven. And he comes one day when Ram is away, because I'm going to make this short, and I'm going to wrap it up. I'm telling too long a version here. And he kidnaps Sita because he hears that Sita is the most beautiful woman on earth. And sees how he thinks he's the greatest guy around, infused by his own ego. And the best is for him. How come this puny Ram guy's got the hottest chick around? So they work out a device to get Ram to go, leave the ashram where they're living in their hut, and to chase after this golden deer, which is not a real deer. It's a demon in the disguise of a deer, and Ram chases the deer. And the deer calls out Ram's name, or Lakshman's name, making the sound in Ram's voice. Lakshman, save me, help! And so Lakshman goes off to save Ram, which doesn't make any sense to him, because why would Ram need saving? But Sita tells him to go, and he goes. And Ravan kidnaps Sita. And no one knows where he takes her. Takes her up in his chariot flying through the sky. And Ram is just brokenhearted and devastated when he gets back and finds Sita gone. So they try to find her. It takes a long time to find her. They meet Hanuman, whose mother was a Vanara, which is like a monkey, but not really a monkey. Monkey-like. And whose father is the wind god. So this guy is one awesome guy. He's also a scholar and very well-spoken. So Hanuman becomes the sub-hero of the story, because he can jump like a monkey but leap big. He can blow himself up as big as a mountain or make himself tiny. He's devoted to Ram. So Hanuman finds Sita as he leaps across the sea to Lanka, Sri Lanka, and there she's being held in the garden of Ravana. Ravana has given her 1 year to succumb to his wishes. He's not raping her. He's giving her a year. And he said, if at the end of the year you don't let me have my way with you, then you will be chopped up and fed to me for my breakfast. Because he's a bit cannibalistic. On the side. When he's feeling peckish. So Hanuman discovers Sita, tells her a story. She says, how do I know you're not one of them? I mean, how do I know I can trust you? And he tells her something that only she and Ram know, some incident that happened between them. She gives him her ring. They capture Hanuman. The demons capture him, set his tail on fire, and he burns the whole city of Lanka and escapes because they can't really capture him. He's too powerful. Puts out his tail and escape, but he learns the intelligence of how the layout is, how many troops they have, all the rest. So everyone always asks, well, why didn't he rescue her? Because it's not his job to rescue her. It's Ram's job to rescue her. It wouldn't suit the story. So he goes back, tells Ram, I found Sita. Here's her signet ring. And she loves you, and she's waiting for you.
She's in a hurry.
He's going to eat her for breakfast if you don't hurry. So then they go to the place where we were in India, Rameshwaram. And they build the bridge from India to Sri Lanka. They write on each stone, Ram. And the monkeys throw, the monkey army, it's a whole army of these little monkeys, throw the stones into the water and the stones float because they have Ram's name on them. And they build this whole stone bridge from India to Lanka. And if you look at the satellite photos from NASA, you can see this bridge existing even today underneath the ocean. It's there. And they all go over, and their terrible battle is fought with all these great warriors on both sides, many of them killed. And finally, the big showdown between Ram and Ravana. Ravana, by the way, I neglected to mention, has 10 heads. And Ram kills Ravana and rescues Sita. And then the monkeys, when Ram is reunited with Sita, expect to see all this warm, loving, cozy reunion. And Ram is quite cold to her. They're going, dude, we just fought a whole battle here. Hello. What, you know? Am I missing something here? Ram said, well, you've been in the house of another man, and I can't really take you back.
Oh, jeez.
Because you're tarnished.
Yeah.
But they didn't do the both thing.
Your tarnished goods.
Absolutely.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know that. He knows, but he knows what's required by society. So he has to play the role. He knows what society thinks. He couldn't accept her back if this other man touched her. He couldn't. It's not like today in Dublin, okay? It's different. This is a long time ago. People actually had principles. No offense. What? Some people do. Lots of people don't. Anyway, taking somebody back who's been touched by another man is no big deal today. But then it was, especially if you're the king and you're setting the standard. You've got to think like this. Hi, Sheila. So, what happens? Sita says, well, fine then. I will enter fire and I will show you. I'll prove my chastity. He never touched me. I've been loyal to you the whole time. So a huge fire is made. And we were at Agni Tirtham. Where we stood on the beach, that's where it was made. Right there. No, no, the ocean. We weren't in on the Ganges. We were in the ocean.
The cow,
yeah. No, that was the ocean.
So everyone went to the Ganges.
Well, maybe you did, but not with us. It was the ocean, my dear.
Next time,
God, Jesus. So, Sita enters the fire, and out she comes the other end. The fire god, Agni, is carrying her. And he presents her to Ram and says, "She is pure. No one has touched her. Here is your wife back for all to see." Everybody had to see this. This was the point. You know, it couldn't just be something behind closed doors. "Oh no, she's pure. It's cool." No. No. She says she is. I believe her. You know. And then they went on the great Vimana, the Pushpaka, Brahma's swan airplane. And they rode to Ayodhya. And the citizens welcomed him back after 14 years. And he was crowned king. And we'll leave it off there. So Ram's appearance day is Friday. And if you want to chant Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, then that's a good mantra to chant. Or Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, another good one.
Or just Ram.
Or Rama, 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 Rama.
Do we make any offerings?
You can make offerings, fruit, flowers, water, incense, fire. It's a day of fasting. And Jai Ram. I think we'll have to end it here now.
Good.
Om Tat Sat. Jai Ram.